I'm Rodrigo Blankenship, and you're listening to the Savage Pads Podcast.
Welcome to part two of Auburn Week on the Savage Pads Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle, and we've got a big one. Former Auburn quarterback, national championship assistant coach at Auburn, 1980 national championship head coach at the University of Georgia, and former Georgia athletic director, Vince Dooley, is joining us for this one. He's joining us again. It's his second time on the show. We're talking the Deep South's oldest rivalry and the threads that have tied these schools together since the beginning of time, seemingly. But first, I'm bringing on a special guest to talk about a certain quarterback who may or may not take the reins at some point this season as QB1. JT Daniels is cleared. But we honestly have no idea who's going to be the starting quarterback for this game. And we know very little about the player Dog Nation is hyping up as a potential solution to Georgia's quarterback dilemma moving forward. That's why modern-day football coach Bruce Rawlinson is joining the show to shed some light on JT Daniels' abilities as a quarterback. For those of you that don't know, modern-day is one of the top football high schools in the country. Coach Bruce Rawlinson has coached Heisman winner Matt Leinart, former Heisman finalist Colt Brennan, former USC quarterback Matt Barkley, and highly touted Alabama freshman Bryce Young at the high school level. In addition to JT Daniels, he's given us the full scoop on JT, as well as a bit of a scouting report on Bama's QB2. We've got a great episode coming up. I've also got a great tailgate coming up with our friends at Southern Brewing Company. In addition to making the perfect beers for Georgia football fans like the Hobnail or the Red and Black, this football season, Southern Brewing Company is creating the perfect game day atmosphere for Dog fans seeking to tailgate and watch the games with the community that is Dog Nation. Bring your chairs, tents, and tailgate supplies on Saturday because the Athens location is showing UGA versus Auburn on the big screen outside. No grills or outside alcohol are allowed. Southern Brewing will have all the beer you need. Masks are required inside the tap room and in the restrooms, as Southern Brewing has committed itself to establishing a true tailgating environment while also maintaining a commitment to the well-being of its customers. I know they appreciate your cooperation and understanding in that department. To learn more about Southern Brewing Company and its upcoming events, please visit www.sobrewco.com. That's www.sobrewco.com. Athens born, Southern made, Southern Brewing Company. Please drink responsibly and only if you're of age. We've got a great show coming up. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man oh man, mano a mano.
He definitely 6 hour miles, me and myself, as close as we have right now to rope on.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, you know, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job of bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
Tyler Simmons, he was onside.
Everybody respects his specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to Auburn Week on the Savage Pads Podcast. Head coach of Modern Day High School, national champion head coach of Modern Day High School, and former coach of JT Daniels, Coach Bruce Rawlinson, is on the line. Coach, thank you for joining us.
Yep, I appreciate you calling. So here we go.
Yes, sir. There's been quite a bit of buzz here in Georgia surrounding JT Daniels, with Coach Smart indicating that he's going to be cleared for this weekend's matchup against Auburn and for the rest of the season. Yet many Georgia fans truly have no idea what kind of kid JT is and what kind of quarterback he is. Can you tell our listeners about your experience coaching JT Daniels at Modern Day?
You know, take it all the way back. We get this kid. We have a quarterback academy, and everybody knows the lineage of quarterbacks that have come through modern day. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Leinert, Barkley, Colt Brennan, you know, there's Bryce Young. It's crazy. JT Daniels. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, I'm proud to say that every one of our quarterbacks, except for one, has gotten a Division I scholarship. But, you know, we get this kid in the sixth grade, and we're kind of going, just look at this guy. And, you know, because you get a lot of these quarterback dads, and they, you know, oh, I'm the next greatest thing since ice cream. And the kid's not, he can't throw a football to save his life. And part of the academy, even in the sixth grade, is we start to introduce them to the conceptual side of football. Mm-hmm. You know, the coverages and things like that. And it, based on whichever class you're in, comes more in depth. Seventh grader gets more than a sixth grader, et cetera. So JT's sixth going to be going to the seventh. And my offensive coordinator, Dave Money, who's been with me all 32 years, after about third or fourth session, he goes, "You got to come down and watch this kid." And I go, "Well, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, I got to go watch a sixth grader." But I said, "All right, you know," and his thought process, his attentiveness, and his maturity, I mean, he's answering questions, and I'm going, wow, took me about, you know, 3 years of coaching to understand that. Mm-hmm. It just fascinated us. And that's the first thing that the Georgia fans get. This kid is conceptually just understands the game. And you know, we used to kid JT, tell him, you know, it'd be 9 o'clock at night and practice had been over since 6 o'clock and see the lights on in the conference room and me, maybe one of the coordinators or both coordinators would still be here. And I'd walk down and JT would be in front of the monitor. I'd go, "Hey, Coach Daniels, you know, you don't got any homework tonight?" And he goes, "No, I was just looking at this." And the next thing you know, he's going, "You know, do you think on this concept, instead of running Dakota, we would run a whip route?" And his mind is constantly going, and he sees stuff. And I haven't even talked about the raw talent, which I'll get to next on, you know, on his ball. But the final thing I would tell the Georgia fans is when JT left, you know, when he reclassified and left, we went to his locker. And there were probably 6 notebooks. He took copious notes from day one in every meeting we had offensively. And then he had other notebooks that he was using as things that interested him in concepts in the pass game and pass protection. I will tell you this, in JT's junior year, which became his last year, when we won the national championship with him at the helm, probably, and I know people are going to say, you know, this old guy is exaggerating, probably 60 to 70% of the time, we just pointed at JT. If we pointed at him, we were saying, "You call it." Wow. And he was calling the game from the field, okay? Probably another 10 to 15% of the time, we would give him the formation that we thought would be the best formation, and then he'd take it from there. Now, that would mean, does he want to go pass? Does he want to go run? Does he want to change routes in the pass? Does he want to tack a motion on it to look for mismatches? You know, that puts you in that other category of the great ones at modern day. And, you know, we've always believed you can teach kids anything, but certain kids, you can teach them everything. And we could teach him everything. And so basically, I had my offensive coordinator and a helmet on the field. And the thing is, Doug, is let's see. JT would be the first one to recognize. He had an offensive line in that final year that you dream about. You know, one of them's at Alabama, Boise State, Army, Oklahoma, and I forget where the other one is. And he had nothing but Division I wide receivers. But the statistics are staggering at what we did. And a lot of it, though, it was all him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the other thing then you get into his, besides his command and understanding, you know, he can throw all the balls. He has touch. He has the ability to get it over the top of a linebacker for that mid-range ball. He's got juice when he wants to bring up the heat. You know, we did not allow JT Daniels in his freshman and sophomore year, and he started as a freshman. I just said, JT, you know, I don't want you packing and getting cute and, you know, thinking you're – we didn't do any zone read stuff. He was a pure drop-back kid. And I said, I don't care. Just go down. You know, I don't need you running because selfishly we didn't have a backup.
All right.
Well, when you start a freshman, there goes all the quarterback dads. Oh, we're out of here. We're not going to, you know, nobody wants to compete. You know what I mean? God forbid we do the right thing and put the kid in a competition. But now in the junior year, we turned him loose a little bit, you know, a little bit of zone read. Cause we had a couple of good tailbacks and let him go ahead and tornado and try to extend the play, you know, and he had some good runs and he's got good speed. So, you know, I think, you know, it's like I told a couple of the coaches yesterday, all right, the good news is JT's cleared and may play a lot or may even start. The bad news is, welcome to the SEC. You're playing Auburn.
Yeah, exactly. And JT's already had, I guess he's been thrown in the fire before, right? You said he's started as a freshman in high school, also started as a 17-year-old at USC. And USC fans got to see a lot of the attributes that you've described in Los Angeles, but JT's freshman campaign did not come without its growing pains. What do you think JT learned in that season, and how do you expect him to improve in 2020?
Well, you know, it's when JT reclassified, you know, I told his dad, you know, just wherever you decide, and it sounded like it was going to be USC. You know, I said, you know, the jump is astronomical. He, as good as JT is, Gatorade Player of the Year, and all that stuff. I go, this is a whole new level. And you know, I was proud of JT because he fought his way through the competition at SC and did have a great freshman year. You know, now I don't think he'll have no problem adjusting. Okay. I mean, the one thing I know, the little bit that I've seen of Georgia, you know, you got a big old offensive line that'll buy him some time. You know, if you don't have some of the best receivers in the country, you know, then Kirby's not doing his job. And JT's not a selfish player. He's got no problem with play action. He's got no problem handing the ball off. He just wants to win. And whatever route that takes him. But I'm hoping they give him a lot of rope early. And you know, the Georgia fans are probably going, this high school guy probably should retire. And I say that because he can handle it. You know, don't restrict the package. Put him in a position, he'll accomplish what you want to accomplish and turn him loose. And hopefully, and then the problem is with COVID and everything, he hasn't had a chance to really show that. And, you know, everybody would probably say, like, we got to limit what he does. I don't think you limit JT Daniels because mentally he's so far past anybody I've ever been around. I mean, Bryce was, you know, the great ones have that ability. They don't want to go to lunch with the rest of the student body. They want to watch video with the offensive coordinator, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
You know, that was JT. So I think you guys are in for some excitement. You know, One thing I know is, you know, people say, well, you know, it's just for JT doesn't care. Okay. I'm telling you, the bigger the game, the bigger he plays. Do you think he'll be nervous? No, absolutely not. Okay. He'll have a big old smile on his face. and I'm telling you, just let that kid just turn it loose. Give him the playbook. And by the end of the game, everybody's going to be going, all right, you know, we can get serious about stuff now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all around, it seems like JT Daniels has pretty much all the attributes Todd Monken's looking for in a quarterback. And I can certainly understand how those two aligned and decided to team up when JT was looking to transfer.
Yeah.
But there was another transfer already on campus in Jamie Newman when JT put in his papers to transfer to Georgia.
Yeah.
What do you know about JT's recruitment process this go-round and why he decided to attend a school that seemed set at quarterback?
I would tell you this. I wasn't that involved in it.
Sure.
I think everything was done above board, but the fact that the head coach called him very shortly after he hit the portal, I think that had a big impression on him. 'Cause let's cut the crap. It's Kirby Smart of Georgia. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, he didn't have an assistant. You know, he didn't have an assistant call to feel it out. At least this is what I've been told.
Okay.
And you know, you're dealing with a smart kid. I mean, you know, think about this, Doug. Okay, when he reclassified, he had to take 9 classes in his junior second semester. Okay.
Yeah.
6 of them on campus and 3 of them online, in order to get all the graduation requirements for Modern Day and also to satisfy USC admissions. And, you know, the kid had a 3.8, you know, and he was pissed that he took a B in a class because he didn't want to deal with the online teacher anymore. You know, he's a smart kid.
Uh-huh.
And I think there was a connection, a chemistry, because he had the opportunity to speak with the offensive coordinator, and it just clicked. They asked me what I thought, and I said, that's the offense you need to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't need to be in, you know, an air raid or anything like that, or a zone read offense. You know, you're in an offense. And I said, look, you know, I've always believed this, man. You can have Johnny Unitas at quarterback, but if you ain't got some dudes up front, you know, you just got a lot of potential back there. You got a Cadillac, but it's out of gas, you know. I mean, he's going to get protected, and he's got big old backs. So, you know, but that connection, I think, was the other thing that kind of pushed him over the top.
Yeah.
Competition, JT could care less.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm telling you, I like kids like JT. Okay. Like Bryce Young. They have that perfect blend of confidence, cockiness and arrogance, and some kids have a little too much of that,
right?
You know, and not enough of the other. But always remember, JT Daniels was a great classmate and he was a great teammate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had just as much fun as any other kid, but when it was time to dial it in, JT dialed it up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, JT's knee injury has kind of been a concern among fans, at least in the state of Georgia this previous week. Everyone knows he's cleared, but no one's exactly sure if he's the same player he was. People never know with these kinds of things. Reportedly, JT underwent a second surgery in the winter to clean up some things from the original ACL tear. What can you tell listeners about JT's recovery and the complications that have prolonged his return to play?
You know, I don't know enough to make a comment about the complications. I just don't. Mm-hmm. And but you and I know, okay, I mean, most of the time that injury is usually, you know, it's usually a year, and it was just about a year. You know, I don't know the severity of the injury. Here's what I do know. He had the top surgeons. He had the top rehabilitation therapists when he was in Southern California, and he continued to work with those people. Okay. It's the University of Georgia. I imagine they have some pretty good rehabilitation therapists and have seen a few injuries and brought kids back. I wouldn't be worried about that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Because one thing is, JT will not fast forward that. He's too smart. Okay. And when I say that, you know, he knows that he's got to have everything lined up. He knows his body. His mom and dad are extremely supportive. And believe it or not, his mom is hugely well-versed in nutrition and supplements and things like that. You know, the kid's a freshman in high school and he's got the best diet I've ever seen. You know, I mean, literally I said, okay, JT, why don't you design the nutrition program? Cause yours looks better than what my experts are telling me. You know, I guarantee you JT probably was ready 2 weeks ago, probably was ready last week and could have gone, but the medical experts have made the decision, but he's not going to put himself in jeopardy.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't either if I were him.
Yeah.
Well, if JT does earn the starting job in the coming weeks, he's likely to face one of the toughest opponents in all of college football in a few weeks, and that's Alabama. Now, former modern-day quarterback Bryce Young, as you have mentioned a few times, plays behind Mac Jones in T-Town. And Georgia has a history of struggling against QB2 for Bama. Looking ahead to that matchup, and this is my last question for you, Coach, what does Georgia face in Bryce Young should he see the field?
Look out.
Yeah.
First of all, selfishly, what a great day for modern day football.
Yeah, that's like having a Super Bowl commercial for modern day football.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll get the brand up nationally. You know what? I tell you what, Bryce is a magician, and you know, I heard one of the commentators when he took the field at Alabama, and you know, she said, "Yeah, they list him at 6'1", 185, but he's not 6 foot. It don't matter whether he's 6 foot. He is 6 foot, but I tell you what, man, he's elusive. He's got a cannon for an arm, and he's got, you know, Daniels has a quick release, and I'm not so sure if Bryce's release isn't even quicker.
Wow.
He smells it. He feels it. He moves in the pocket. You know, he's a handful. He's a handful. And I would tell you this, you know, it's a situation that you kind of go, this is crazy, you know, if that were to happen. But the one thing, you know, JT Daniels and Bryce, you know, they found a way to win, you know, and again, they're both the same type of kids. The bigger the game, the bigger it is. I mean, we're down against IMG, and Bryce is only a junior at the time, and we're down by four. So a field goal doesn't do us any good. There's a 1:33 left on the clock, and Bryce, you know, we got a turnover. We're deep. You know, we've got to go 73 to pull it out. You know, and he jogs by me and he goes, "No sweat, coach. We're winning it." I mean, the place is rocking. There's 12,000 people, you know. And I go, okay, let's see what you got. Kid goes 6 for 6. Three of them on just, you know, should have been sacked. God knows how he got out of there. And You know, one of them was you've got the defensive end. What's the kid's name that was the Maxwell winner? Great kid, plays outside linebacker for you guys. The kid from IMG.
Oh, Nolan Smith.
Nolan Smith. We're dealing with him, trying to keep him off the coming from the outside edge.
Yeah.
And Bryce takes us right down the field, and I go, oh, we might have got down there too fast because we're going to have to give him the ball. And,
right.
And he zone reads it, rides the damn thing. I'm going, come on, Bryce, come on. And then he pulls it at the last second, goes 4 yards for a touchdown. And only Bryce, it was probably the only time he put his fist in the air, handed the official the ball, goes by me, the place is going nuts. Goes by him and he goes, I told you.
Wow. He
that's what you're dealing with.
Yeah. He sounds like a nightmare for an opponent. So I appreciate you giving us the heads up. I'll try to pass the word on to Kirby, see if we can prepare for QB2 this time, as well as the first quarterback. But Coach Rawlinson, man, it's been a pleasure having you on here. I appreciate you taking a moment of your time to join us and give us the scoop on JT Daniels.
All right, Big Doug, you take care of yourself, man. Enjoy the game Saturday. I'm jealous.
Yes, sir. We will. And we'll be pulling for Mater Dei come this, what is it? Just January? You guys kick off?
January. Yeah.
It's different here.
Does that sound weird? Yeah, does that sound weird or what?
Yeah. All right. We'll be pulling for Mater Dei in January. Appreciate it, Coach.
Yeah, you want to pull. I got about 12 D1 guys. All right, brother. Take care.
Yeah. I got to say, before we move on, Coach Rawlinson is an absolute pleasure to speak with. He's got a heck of a program going on over there. And if my kid is an elite football prospect, I'd have to think long and hard about moving out to California to have my child play at Mater Dei. But you know what I don't have to think long and hard about? I don't have to think long and hard about where I want to eat out and enjoy Southwestern-inspired Southern cuisine that complements the Athens community's distinctive character. I honestly get hungry every time I say the words Last Resort Grill, because to me, the name is synonymous with delicious flavor. And now Last Resort Grill has made some exciting changes to make that flavor available to everyone in the Athens area in this time. So if you're looking for a dine-in experience, stop by dinner Wednesday through Sunday starting at 5 p.m. and enjoy Last Resort's awesome new outdoor garden space. But if you prefer to pick up for whatever reason, the Last Resort Grill is now open for curbside pickup Wednesday through Sunday. You can order from the dinner menu, or you can pick up one of their freshly prepared parchment dishes, which you can finish at home. Just call at 706-549-0810 to place your order and visit lastresortgrill.com to view the full menu, learn about catering and events, and learn about LRG's Athens community initiatives. The Last Resort Grill is a proud sponsor of the Savage Pads podcast and this segment with head coach Vince Dooley. It's Georgia Auburn week, and it's time to dig into this rivalry. So most Georgia fans absolutely loathe the Tigers, as I do. But one of our very own came by way of the Plains and contributed immensely to that program in the 50s and 60s, and that's Coach Vince Dooley, who is on the line with us now. Coach Dooley, first off, thank you for joining us. Second off, how do you describe your sentiment toward your alma mater, Auburn, that would later become one of your biggest rivals?
Well, it's sometimes hard for real alumni and fans to understand how you could go to one school and then if you get an opportunity professionally, that then you are totally committed to the other school, particularly when they're rivals. But there's been a great history of that at Auburn. You know, Coach Jordan, who was a longtime Auburn coach, was the line coach at Georgia under Coach Butts when he got the job at Auburn. And then when he did, he brought several Georgia players who were in coaching with him. And then when I got the job, when I was at Auburn playing and an assistant coach, I got the job at Auburn, and I brought with me several Auburn coaches, Jim Pyburn, and then probably most people remember Irk Russell, who was one of the great defensive coaches and also won three national championships at Georgia Southern. And then Pat Dye, who played at Georgia, then became the head coach at Auburn, and he brought some Georgia coaches with him back to Auburn. So there's been this, somebody described it as an underground railroad between the two schools. And we in the coaching profession can understand how you commit yourself, because that's where your check is being signed, by that school. So, and we're all competitors, and we have an obligation, since we are coaching at another school, to do the best we can, regardless of who we play and regardless of our love, which will always be for your alma mater.
Yes, sir. Before you coached at Georgia, and when you were at your alma mater, Auburn, you were solely an Auburn man at that time. You had no obligations to Georgia, no history with Georgia. At that time, what was your impression of Georgia, and how had you experienced the Deep South's oldest rivalry as a player and coach for the Auburn Tigers?
Well, early on when I played and even coached, the game was always in Columbus, Georgia. So there were plenty of Georgia alumni and Auburn alumni in Columbus. It's only 35 or 40 miles from Auburn. And so it was there for a good while, but the stadium was just not big enough as the game grew bigger and bigger. And then we finally went home and home when I was coaching at Auburn. It was a big rivalry, and probably when you talk about hate, it's, I guess you could get that way. I never was. I just saw them as a big rival. Now, when I my son was growing up, and I had an opportunity to go back to Auburn, he had was so indoctrinated into Georgia and became such a rival that when he was 10 years old, and he cried. He said, "I hate Auburn." Well, at that age, that's the way you you think. And yeah, we have a a dislike for your competitor and so forth. But it's I think the Auburn Georgia rivalry has always been on a high plane, even though we're both better, very competitive against each other. It's been a great rivalry.
Yes,
that
sir.
It's particularly good because of the Underground Railroad that I described.
Right.
And somebody described it as feuding cousins. And I guess that's what it is more than anything else.
Right. So Georgia's going into this year's contest with a lot of question marks. But that's certainly nothing new in this series. Nearly every year feels like it's either a toss-up, but there's been a number of years where Georgia's been heavily doubted going into this one. One of those years was 1986 with quarterback Wayne Johnson taking on number 8 Auburn in Jordan Hare. Can you tell our listeners what it took to overcome the previous few weeks of adversity to get the job done in the famous game between the hoses?
Well, it was a big upset, and there's been upsets so many times. This game has been always, as far as I know, in November. And I say as far as I know, which isn't quite true. The first time we played each other, when we weren't even around in 1892, somebody said it was played in February. But outside of that, it's been played most all the time in late November. And usually there was a championship riding on the game, and as it had been so many times in the past. Either Auburn or Georgia ends up winning the championship, or at least the division, the East or division of the championship. Now, when you play in this early, there's a lot of kinks that have to be worked out with a football team. And Georgia is going through that right now. Mm-hmm. There's a quarterback issue. If the ball game was played in November, it would be resolved by the time we played each other. But there's a lot of uncertain there. Certainly not uncertain with Auburn's quarterback. Bo Nix has mm-hmm. just been terrific as freshman and sophomore year. But there are some questions on Auburn's defense. So you've got these early questions that can only be resolved with time. But because the game is so early, these questions will become major issues for either one or the other team based on the outcome of the game.
Yes, sir. And in that 86 game, there were some issues, I guess, across the board for Georgia. What did it take for you all in that game between the hoses to overcome that adversity and pull off the upset?
Well, it was some late issues, and the reason it was late issues is that our quarterback's mother had passed away.
Right.
And so the James Jackson, the quarterback, was not able to play. Johnson, who had to come off the bench, mm-hmm. which in some ways was a blessing in disguise, being from Columbus, he had his greatest football game was against Auburn. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was an advantage that Auburn had seen Johnson and what he was capable of doing. He threw the ball extremely well, and he also kept the ball. He was a big, tall guy that was tough to bring down. But the defense, we had a great kicking game, and the defense played extremely well. And Auburn was a very talented team, and it finally ended up with an interception by a linebacker late in the game that ensured the win for Georgia. So it was a great win because Auburn had dominated about 3 or 4 years in a row with Bo Jackson and some other great players, a guy named Rocker, an Outland Trophy winner.
Right.
But that was a big upset. But I also know upsets because I was on the other side of upset when Auburn upset us at a particular time. So it was a great win for us.
Right. And when Coach Dye was coach at Auburn, they pulled off a few against you all. Was there ever a moment, I know that you played a pretty big part in Pat Dye being hired as head coach at Auburn, was there ever a moment when you regretted directing your own competition at Auburn in the direction of a head coach who would bring your rival school 4 conference titles as well as a couple wins against Georgia?
Well, I knew he was going to be a great rival, but you do have some loyalty to your alma mater.
Right.
And so I felt like that that since I was offered the job and had turned it down, that I felt like that the great the best opportunity for Auburn was Coach Dye, who I felt like would have been a great fit there. Mm-hmm. And he definitely was, and has established himself as being an Auburn man, even though his alma mater is Georgia.
Right.
And we certainly will miss Pat already.
Yes.
He and I became... while we were competitors, we respected each other as competitors. But we also, when we both retired from coaching, we both had a great interest in trees, and particularly Japanese maples. So I visited his garden on 2 or 3 occasions, and he came to Athens and visited mine. I gave him a tour. So we were always. We didn't talk a lot of football at that time. We were talking more Japanese maples than anything else.
Right.
So anyway, he was, he had a great run at Auburn, and he was a tough competitor and a good friend. And we shared this passion together about Japanese maples, and so we'll all miss him, and God bless him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you kind of referred to this, but I mean, you and Pat Dye really kind of had the opposite career. You played at Auburn, he played at Georgia, and then you coached at each other's schools. But it wasn't always set to be that way. In 1980, when Georgia was preparing to face Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl, the Auburn Tigers came calling to bring you home as head coach to your alma mater. So you had to face the decision of continuing to lead what was an undefeated team, depending on you and its quest for a title. And then you've got your alma mater offering you what's probably a dream job, really, for any coach, that is the opportunity to take over as head coach at your alma mater. How difficult was it for you to choose between those two options?
Well, there was a lot of pull. My wife, Barbara, of course, she's an Auburn graduate as well. So we had a lot of friends. In fact, the governor of the state was my roommate, a fellow named Bob James. And so he was a part of the recruiting for me to come back. But in the final analysis, I had just been at Georgia too long. I had been there 17 years. I had all of these teams that I coached, all of these players, and then all of my family, all the children were Georgia fans. They all grew up. They all went to the University of Georgia. And so my roots were more recent and deeper at Georgia than they had been at Auburn. And so I guess it was a difficult decision, but it was best for me and for my family to stay where I was. And but I'll always, in that respect, have two loves, I guess. Your love for your alma mater and love for the one that you really committed yourself to, which I did for 40 years at the University of Georgia.
Yes, sir. Well, I know I speak for all of Dog Nation when I say that folks are very pleased that you did decide to stick around at Georgia as head coach and later athletic director. You've represented Georgia well, and I don't know, you've kind of bridged this rivalry so well between Georgia and Auburn. It's really incredible to see. But, Coach, I know you've got a lot going on over there, and I want to be considerate of your time. So I just want to thank you again for taking a moment of your time to join us here on the podcast.
Well, I enjoyed it, and it'll be a great game, that's for sure. And we'll find out a lot about our teams here come Saturday night late. And go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Thanks, Coach.
I'll be a dog till I die. Till I die, till I die.
Woof. All right, and that wraps up this episode. Those of you that will be in the stadium, first off, I'm jealous. And if you end up with one extra ticket, I will sit with strangers. So just hit me up on Twitter at Savage Pads. But while I'm on that subject, go ahead and give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Savage Pads. We'll be posting our podcast every week, as well as some other Georgia football content. For those of you listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please subscribe. I'm trying to build this thing up and get the word out to as many dog fans as possible. Working really hard to produce some content that's beneficial to Georgia fans. So we appreciate your support and you spreading the word. All right, guys. Appreciate you listening, and go Dogs.